Blog Talk Radio.
And we're back. It's been a month, but we finally made it back. This is the New England sports blog, The Irish Guy, along with John Groder. We're a half hour late today. We've been kind of opening up a store, and you know our hours aren't always the same. So a lot of times you get home at 7 o'clock at night after doing manual labor, like John does almost every day now. You don't really feel like getting on talking and, you know, having a new baby in the house. A whole bunch of changes that made it a little bit more difficult to get on here, but we've decided to rededicate ourselves. We've been posting on the website a little bit more frequently here. We're still looking for an editor, some writers. We're going to do some profit sharing on the on what the website generates. So, you know, if anyone hears this after the fact and, you know, is interested in helping us out, you know, you can send me a tweet at Peter_McAvoy, or you can email me at pmcavoy9@gmail.com. McAvoy spelled M-C-A-V-O-Y. So it's been a while, like I said, and a lot's happened. We went through the whole NFL playoffs. We missed the national championship. We were going to try to be on last week for that, and then I left my credit card at home, couldn't pay the bill. Blog Talk Radio does not let you talk for free, so we did not make it on. We also missed half the Celtics roster being turned over. They'll give you any player. But we're a month away from pitches and catchers. Patriots made it back to their tying 8th Super Bowl. If you think about in the last 10 years how dominant. Now, you have to go 14 years. How dominant the Patriots have been, because, you know, before this run, they were only in the Super Bowl twice.
Right.
Once they got demolished by the Bears, like 41-0 or something ridiculous like that. And then, you know, then in the 96 Super Bowl against the Packers.
The Parcells gave up the game.
Yeah, that they should have won.
Honestly, they had more talent, better team.
They should have won. You know, they lost by, I think, 10 or 13. It was in that range. It wasn't a big blowout, but, you know, they weren't in it. And then you kind of get to the 2000s, and you think about the history of the teams that they made it to making their 8th Super Bowl. You have the Dallas Cowboys.
Yep.
The 49ers.
No.
No. The Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yep.
So you have two teams that, you know, if you think about their history, it spread out over a long, long period of time. You know, they didn't have periods of time where they went to, you know, 5 Super Bowls that short amount of time. And being that competitive.
They went to 5.
5 in a row or something like with Terry Bradshaw.
Awesome.
Yeah. And, you know, you have the Patriots, you know, kind of always in it.
It basically has become the symbol of excellence in the NFL.
And it's really crazy because they, you know, we're going to get into the deflated ball thing here in a few minutes, but, you know, to kind of be under the same rules, at least, you know, you look at the tax implications and you look at what they had to deal with as far as salary cap and all that kind of stuff. They've basically done it on the fact that Tom Brady's wife is so rich that he can say, hey, you guys need $20 million next year? No problem. You're only going to pay me a salary, $900,000?
Yeah.
And, you know, if I get hurt, I get my full salary?
Yeah.
By all means, go for it. And that's essentially what's helped them keep it together. But they draft well. They do everything really well.
Key free agency. A lot of moves. I mean, Belichick runs a train. He starts at the top, makes all the moves, does everything. And the fact that he can do all of that and still keep the Patriots where they are, I mean, honestly, he is the greatest football coach ever.
Probably, if you look at it and you look at football minds, You know, you take general managers, team presidents, you take, you know, I mean, Al Davis in his prime is one of the best. You take Jerry Jones when he first took over Dallas, you know, and you take Tom Landry and you take Vince Lombardi, you take those guys and you take actual football minds and what they've been able to do for a long period of time, you know, that's really unmatched what Belichick's done since he came to New England.
I don't think it's close either. Like, a lot of people are like, oh, man, you know, Don Shula and all that. And I'm like, well, yeah, look at it of the, you know, perspective of the era he's doing it in, the way that they're doing it. They're not just beating teams. They're demolishing teams. I mean, they probably had, in that era, the greatest team in NFL history. Yes, they lost the Super Bowl. But as far as records,
if there wasn't injuries and one bullshit catch on the helmet, I mean,
they should have the second perfect season in NFL history. They should have, realistically, at least one more ring, if not two more rings.
Yeah.
If they win this year, I mean, think about it. They could have easily had four or five, let alone even the six.
Yeah, and then you throw into the mix, you have Tom Brady. He's been to, you know, this is his fifth. He ties Joe Montana.
Six.
So he surpasses. Is it surpasses Montana?
Passed Elway.
Elway. That was the big one.
Yeah, Elway had six Super Bowls.
Yes. Yeah, so he lost
five Super Bowls. Yeah.
Lost three. Won the last two. But you have it so that you have, you know, this combination together, and who's to say, you know. You know, you had Ray Lewis being an idiot last week and talking about the fact that the only reason why Tom Brady is because of the Tuck rule.
Oh, I mean, let's be honest. Ray Lewis is an idiot.
That, you know, one of the best comments I heard about that was Cliff Gentura, who used to work for me in the Waterville store when we were up there. He posted that him saying that's like the only reason why we know Ray Lewis because he got away with murder.
Yeah, pretty much.
You know what I'm saying? It's
saying,
like,
I say, once you range was one of the greatest linebackers of all time, but still.
Ew, if he got convicted of that murder, nobody knows
about him.
You
know? Exactly. He's just so, right now, not making millions of dollars working for CBS.
Yeah, and, you know, you have those comments and stuff like that. Even Drew Bledsoe, you know, says that, you know, he wasn't playing as well as he needed to be playing.
No.
Because, I mean, if I remember correctly, that season they were 2-4 or something like that when he got hurt, or 0-2, or they were off to a bad start.
They were sub 500, and I think they won at least 10 straight or something like that.
Yeah, 9 out of 10.
Yeah.
It was a great run, and you know, Tom, you know, it was Tom Brady's job to lose at that point, and you know, Belichick obviously didn't really fear Bledsoe that much because he traded him in the division. He didn't care if he was going to play him twice a year.
No, he didn't care at all. I mean, Drew Bledsoe, at that point in his career, I mean, even after that point in his career, when he went and played for the Cowboys and the Bills, he never was the quarterback that he was early on in his career.
That hit changed a lot.
Yeah.
You know, you can't get hit like that, get punctured lung, and
it doesn't even
recover
that serious. I mean, look at Tom Brady, man. I mean, he got hit in the knee, and you still see him, you know, ghosting in the pocket.
And the thing is, like, with speaking about Tom Brady's knee, I mean, if anyone hits him close to the knee, he flips out. He gets pissed.
Yeah, I mean, he's got no right to. It's part of the game. He can't get hit in the head. He can't get hit too low. So, I mean, it's one of those things that, like, there's no real good option as far as a defensive player. And half the time when that happens, it's his own damn guy rolling into his leg.
Yeah, and that's you know, it's part of being a quarterback in the NFL. They can't, you know, the commissioner can only protect you so much. At some point, you know, something's going to have to give. You know, one thing, you know, as a season overall, you start to see, like, players getting hurt trying to make good hits.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to find out that, you know, helmet's a bad thing, no matter what.
No.
But, you know, if the running back's starting to duck and you're already lunging.
There's no way. I mean, that plays football, and you play football, we know what it's like. When you're full bore and you die with somebody, I don't care what anybody says, you can't control your entire body when you're in the air.
No,
not,
there's no way.
You know, I mean, we're not you know, professional divers.
And when you try that, you're ending up with neck injuries, yeah, you're ending up with shoulder injuries.
Because then you become tentative. When you become tentative, you make mistakes. When you make mistakes, you get hurt. It's pretty simple.
So we're going to move on and kind of talk about this whole ball gate thing. Ball gate.
When deflated balls are all in one's
pants. Yeah, I love that. I saw that this morning and I just loved it. You know, even, okay, let's say
they did it. Let's say they did. Let's say Bill Belichick.
Did that score 37 points?
Let's get a 20. Said, yeah, deflate some balls for me.
Yeah. I mean, does that make them 37 points better than the freaking Colts?
Yeah.
I mean, Andrew Luck came into the game and he sucked.
Yeah.
And the defense wasn't very good. You know.
There was nothing. It didn't matter. Andrew Luck could have went in there and played a perfect game. And they still would have lost that game.
Because their defense isn't that good.
No. I mean, you can't let up the amount of points that they let up and expect to win, you know, against a team like the Patriots. Not with the lack of mistakes that they make and the way that they play.
Yeah, and one thing that the Patriots win really showed, as far as if you're a Broncos fan, is the fact that if Peyton Manning comes back and, you know, they re-sign most of the tools, they need a running back. Because they're not going to make it without a running back in Denver.
Anderson played really well, though. I mean,
yeah, but the thing is that I think part of the reason why John Fox got canned and Del Rio and all those guys got canned there was the fact that they didn't trust the run game. Look at LeGarrette Blount did. You know, Seattle's paying him. Not Seattle. Pittsburgh's, the Steelers are paying him to absolutely ass kick on the Seahawks, on the Colts yesterday. And, you know, it comes down to running. And the same thing earlier in the season, Jonas Gray with a 205-yard.
You have to have a running. I mean, you can throw the ball 50 times a game. I don't care. You can do that. But honestly, you have to have a running game to beat certain teams.
Yeah.
You know, don't get me wrong. Yeah, obviously, when the Patriots went out and beat Baltimore in the divisional, I don't have
they had to throw it.
Rushing. They had to throw it.
You know? When you're down 14 points twice, you have to throw the ball.
You have to throw the ball. And, I mean, that's completely understandable. In reality, Baltimore's run defense isn't that bad. Their pass defense is shot.
Yeah, that's going to be one of the big points that comes across when they take on Seattle is how is the Seattle's front seven going to handle LeGarrette Blount, possibly Jonas Gray, and, you know, you have, who's the guy? Shane Vereen. Who's the other guy that absolutely lit up Studebaker yesterday? Did you see that?
Yeah,
I mean, he completely lit up this guy. Like, you could see it. Elderman was running so fast, the guy just running the other way, just absolutely. Yeah. And it was awful.
The thing, too, that other people got to realize is Russell Wilson yesterday might have had a concussion. I mean, I don't know if you saw that hit on that.
Hammered.
Oh, yeah, real. You know, and I mean, he has been overlaying effects from that. That could have been.
Yeah, I mean, the Seattle game, Seattle earned the win, but they had no business winning that game, if that makes any sense.
No, we should be watching the Patriots-Green Bay.
Yeah, and, you know, Mike McCarthy made the right call on the first time when they kicked the field goal.
You got to be aggressive.
The second time, though, you're only up three. You got the ball in good field position. You're going to give – this is what – if it failed on the second time, you're giving Seattle 99 yards. You had Russell Wilson, who hadn't completed the pass, just 0 for 8 at that point. No, you know, he threw – I think he was at one pick or two picks at that point. And, you know, you're giving this guy – you can't do anything in this game so far – 99 yards if you screw up and you miss it.
A huge uphill battle.
And say if they punt it, you're going to get the ball back on your own 40. Worst case scenario.
I mean, within three plays. The way Aaron Rodgers plays, and that's three plays. You saw that at the end of the game, 2 minutes to go. They were on 40. 3 plays later, they were on field goal position.
One thing that I did notice, though, is that Jordy Nelson and Cobb were very underwhelming. Like, they dropped passes that were hit right in their hands. Yeah. You know, one of Rodgers' picks was just, I mean, he hit the guy in the hand, gets tipped up, and then, you know, whoever on Seattle's back there caught it.
The funny thing about Seattle defense is, you know, they atoned some of the drops yesterday to the fact that they might have heard some footsteps coming. And
you're a football player. Tough enough.
The reputation, though, of Earl Thomas, Richard Sherman, the back, you know, the rest of the secondary, the reputation that they have is that they're going to crush you, and they're going to drill you every chance they get.
The good thing is we have some crazy assholes on the Patriots that, you know, you have Edelman, you have Gronk.
Yeah.
They don't care. They don't mind getting it. Danny Amendola, though, you know, he had a good game against Baltimore. I mean, basically, he made that two big catches in that game. This last week, he did nothing. But, you know, he's a guy that's going to get affected by footsteps. You know, he doesn't want to get his bell rung again. But, you know, you have Edelman and Gronkowski going to be going up against those guys. They don't care if they get hit.
No, Gronk. But, I mean, one of those things, though, if you lose those weapons, they got to be careful. You lose Gronk, it's a completely different ballgame.
Yeah, but, I mean, the right that they got from Tampa Bay, I mean, he's no Gronkowski, but he can still, you know, he can fit that role well enough. If, say, Gronkowski got hurt or his bell rung or something for a little bit, you know, he can play 10, 15 snaps in that game.
But the tough thing is, and a lot of people don't understand the dynamic of what Gronkowski brings to the table, and it's not just his you know, pass catching, pass playing. He's the best run-blocking tight end in football. So he controls so much of the line of scrimmage. So much that happens.
He will throw you out of the club.
Exactly. I mean, that's the thing. He wasn't playing around. He does it on if you watch him every single play, he kills somebody every single play.
Yeah, I mean, other than J.J. Watt, he's the best player in football.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned, because there's not too many guys who on the run side.
Contribute to the whole game.
Yeah, on the run side, he's one of the best run blockers. He can get anybody out of there,
yep.
Especially when you have these linebackers in the 3-4, you know, lining up right where he is. To block those guys like Suggs and Matthews and those kind of guys, that's a pretty big deal. And then to get open, have a mismatch with a guy who's a corner, comes up to his shoulder, catches the ball over him, then runs him right
faster,
over.
He's stronger, he's bigger than all of those guys. I mean, that's just... In itself, I mean, he's a complete freak, but he still, you know, does so many good things fundamentally in the game that it controls such an aspect that, you know, that people that have a good football eye know it.
Yeah, because they're saying that his matchup with, was it Chandler, or who is it on the, who's the linebacker from the lineup against him?
The guy who won the Super Bowl MVP last year.
Yeah. And that matchup's going to be huge. To, you know, I see the Patriots actually running Tim Wright, running some two tight end sets. I see them running the ineligible receiver in the slot and then, you know, those kind of gimmicky things.
Yeah, and they're going to have to switch their game plan up because, honestly, they haven't seen a defense like this all year long.
Yeah, but the thing is, if you take the last two games, even with planning that that Pergano had and their defense and stuff had, they were so they didn't know what the Patriots are going to do when they did it. You know, they didn't know if it was going to be a pass. They didn't know if it was going to be a run. They didn't know who to cover when the Patriots ran that.
Yeah, it's really tough to scheme for a team that has so many tricks and uses every single objective and rule that they can against you. I mean, the same thing with that Baltimore play call.
And in the end of that whole Baltimore thing, I know we're kind of talking back, you know, 2 weeks now. But the thing is like Harbaugh, he was completely in the wrong.
Yeah.
Like the referees was giving him a bone by telling him which receivers not to cover.
Exactly.
So you know, if anything, the referees are helping him illegally.
And the guy's such an idiot, he runs out there like. So I get the flag, obviously.
Yeah, and the referees didn't know what the hell was going on either, and I guess that's, you know, part of the problem.
Half the problem is they didn't know what he was pissed off about until it was too late.
Yeah.
You know, and they just flagged him because they thought he was a dumbass out on the field saying, you know what, I'm going to do, get out of here.
Yeah, so, you know, you had that whole situation. But if the Patriots kind of keep up that offense where you don't know what they're going to do, even Seattle, as good as Seattle is, I think that a team like that will struggle with it. Because the Patriots' offense, it's a smart offense. It's not just throwing the ball downfield. It's not Peyton Manning where, you know, it's just a vertical game. You know, there's a lot more to the Patriots' offense than just up and down the field.
In 2011, you guys went to the Super Bowl in the last 4 years, he made it to the AFC title game every single year. Is this the best Patriots team that we've seen since 2007?
It's tough to say. It's tough to say. I mean, if you think about
it, would you say it is, in your opinion?
Here's what you have. You had a downfield threat in Randy Moss. Mm-hmm. You had a slot threat in Wes Welker. You didn't have Gronkowski because Gronkowski was hurt. You had Aaron Hernandez at that point, which, you know, without Gronk on the field, Aaron Hernandez was above average, but he wasn't as great as, you know, as he was with Gronkowski. Yeah, this team is kind of a bunch of misfits. It kind of reminds me of the 0-4 Red Sox, where you have Edelman, who's a quarterback, playing, you know, wide receiver, and you have Gronkowski, who's just a complete nutcase. I mean, I'd love to party with that guy. I don't think I'd survive it, but I'd love to party with that guy.
Not a chance.
Then you have Tom Brady, kind of the elder statesman. I mean, it's so different. You know, I think that this team's chance to win isn't as good as that team was back then.
Mm-hmm.
But they have enough weapons.
Done in 2011 or 2007?
2007. So, you know, the weapons aren't there as they were, but their play calling is a lot better. There's a lot of aspects of the game that I feel that they are better, but Seattle's defense is so damn good. That if, I mean, think about it, Aaron Rodgers lit up the Patriots. The Patriots have one of the top five defenses.
Yeah, they're ranked number four.
So, you know, they didn't play well in Green Bay. Nobody really does.
No.
But, you know, they didn't come out and dominate. You know, they didn't, you know, Aaron Rodgers, who's a very good quarterback, I don't think he's as smart as Brady, but he, you know, he's smarter than Roethlisberger. He's smarter than a lot of the, you know,
but he's the most physically gifted quarterback in the NFL.
And he's smart.
Yeah. He's got the best arm. He's got the best accuracy. He's got the best ball. I mean, he's got all of that going for him. He's got, you know, great movement. He's got a great offensive line.
Well, so, you know, back to your question, you know, do I think this team is better? No. I actually think that this team has a better chance to win, though, because they're healthier than they were either the last time they made it to the Super Bowl, which is kind of why I think, you know, with Richard Sherman and Earl Thomas being hurt, you know, a sprained elbow, I mean, you know, dislocated shoulder is going to be the tough one on Earl Thomas. But, you know, they're beat up. Russell Wilson, I mean, say even if he didn't get his bell rung, he still threw four picks. His QBR was still
18.
You know, it's...
And a young player like that, think about the mental, like, strain that he just went through.
And then he's going to...
At the end of the game, he was emotionally broken down. Like, he would hit the bottom. He hit the bottom, and, like, within 5 minutes, like, literally got jolted into the stratosphere. It was incredible.
Yeah, and you know, he's going to have Chandler Jones and Vince Wilfork all over him all night. Because the Patriots have a good front seven, so they're going to be able to... I mean, if they can control the running game, not that they will, you know, if they can, they win the game. If they keep Marshawn Lynch off the field and under 100 yards.
If he has under 100 yards, the Patriots have an 80% chance, I think.
Yeah, and that...
We're not doing predictions today, we're doing next week.
Yeah. And if you keep them under 100 yards, I think the Patriots can beat them because Russell Wilson, no matter what anybody says, he doesn't have the weapons around him. And, you know, if you don't have people to throw the ball to, you're not going to win games like the Super
Bowl. They're very fortunate to be in the position that they're in. And it's funny, if you look back after week four, after they got done playing Aaron Rodgers, Peyton Manning, and a couple other really good quarterbacks, if you look at the quarterbacks that the Seattle Seahawks played since week 5 through 17, half of them were backups because of the Arizona situation. Half of them were chumps because they played the AFC West this year, which is, you know, Kansas
Oakland Raiders.
City, Oakland.
They lost to the Chargers.
The Chargers, you know, Denver. So they played Oakland, you know, and then Oakland's awful. And it's one of those things, if you look through the whole board, they played so many mediocre quarterbacks, and Colin Kaepernick had a down year. So it's one of those things, they played a lot of really bad quarterbacks during that stretch of winning all those games. So the fact that they, you know, ran off all those wins in a row really isn't that surprising.
It isn't that
their defense, it's not that surprising.
And it's not that impressive, really.
No. And they didn't even, I mean, they scored good points and they beat some good teams.
But their defense was scoring.
Yeah.
Cam Newton played well against them, but you know, the Carolina's defense is terrible. That's why they were the record. They were 6-7 and whatever. I mean, it was their defense. It wasn't the fact that their offense was completely inept.
No, I mean they had rough points in this year. Really, you know, they got lucky. So they're lucky they had a down year.
So just as a reminder, our call in is 347-850-8178. We would like to have callers call in if anyone out there is listening. We did post the number on Twitter as well. So kind of back to, you know, the Patriots defense a little bit before we transition to some Celtics talk. You know, what do you think about the Patriots defense? I mean, this is how I look when you match up a game like this. You have the Patriots offense, which is the top offense in the league, versus the top defense in the league. Then you have Seattle's offense, which is probably middle of the road. And then you have the Patriots defense, which is ranked fourth. You know, how do you think that's going to affect the game? I mean, how much is defense? I mean, I can't imagine if the winning team scores 40 points, it's going to be the Patriots, right?
Yeah, definitely. The matchups are tough, and that's what Belichick is so good at. He's the master of using matchups to their favor. If the defense for the Patriots is a focal point in this game, okay, they're going to win. There's no chance that their defense comes out, plays well, and that they lose, unless, obviously, you know, something crazy happened, like Tom Brady just imploded. And that's not going to happen because we've seen in the past and, you know, for the future that he's obviously clinched. I think personally, over the, you know, lifetime of the Belichick-Brady era, I feel like this is probably the best defense that the Patriots have had since 2004. Not overall. Those you know, three Super Bowl winning teams were incredible. Bruce C. and all those guys. There, you know, but honestly, I feel since 2004, this is the best defense that you guys have had. It's so well rounded with the additions of Revis and Brown, and the way that they use the mindset of, okay, we're going to double team your number one with Brown and another, you know, who is it, the other corner there?
Ryan or Chung.
And then we're going to put Revis on your number two and just shut you down, okay? That takes out everyone's top two options automatically. There's no other team in the league that does that. I'm honestly shocked that that's something that I know Seattle defense is diesel. They're the number one defense in the league. I'm surprised they haven't stolen that from Bill Belichick.
Well, they're cocky. I mean, if you look at what they did against the Packers, they wouldn't let Sherman off the right side of the field. Sherman's always going to play. Yeah, I don't get it. I mean, that was cocky. It worked out for him, but you know, in this coming game, I mean, you know, if they're, you know,
Pete Carroll's got to pull out all the stops. I mean, he really does if they want a chance.
But he's cocky, you know. He's a system guy.
Yeah.
He, you know,
they believe in him, which is a big part of team football. I mean, you got to believe in order to get where you're going to go.
But if Earl Thomas is hurt and he can't run the coverage on the left side of the field to help out, or if he's hurt,
which arm is it?
I believe it's his left arm.
So, I mean, that makes it tough to turn the inside,
So I think it's going to be really, really interesting to see what the news comes out over the next week, when we meet again next week, to really see, you know,
how effective, how hurt. You
know, and we're not going to really know. Yeah, we're not really going to know anything until after the Pro Bowl.
Well, the beauty of it, too, is honestly, I mean, they're going to take a page out of the Patriot book, and they're not going to play shit.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to fill out their injury report.
Something like that. Arm injury. That I can tell you. You know, Brady's had a leg injury for 7 years now.
he has a wimpy ankle.
Everyone's thinking, is Brady third?
Is his stool?
No, I mean, it's one of those things. I feel that the Patriots have a great chance to win the game. If they don't their defense shows up, and like I said, this is the best defense I feel like they've had since 2004. They've got great interior defenders, awesome secondary. They don't make stupid mistakes. They make the occasional mistakes, but they don't make stupid mistakes that really cost them. I mean, and the big thing is it took the Patriots to get healthy in order for us to see their full evolution of how good of a team, you know, their defense really was. In comparison to, obviously, they struggled at the beginning of the year. You know, those first couple of weeks, and the Patriots are, what, 2-2? Didn't look that good.
Got demolished by demolished. The Chiefs.
Yeah, I mean, you know what's really funny about it? They were 2-2, got demolished by the Chiefs on that long winning streak. Seattle was 3-3, got demolished by the Chiefs on that long winning streak.
Yeah, I just think that they need to get a wake-up call, the Chiefs. Yeah. It's pretty amazing that they didn't make the playoffs. I mean, they should have. The
talent that they had, the coaching staff they had.
Well,
subdivision.
It comes down to the quarterback. I mean, Alex Smith is serviceable. When you don't have a single touchdown throw to a wide receiver, I think they made it the whole season without
all
one.
Year. They almost had it in the last
year. Yeah,
and
then Kelsey recognized it. Yeah.
Exactly.
So, I mean, you can't go, like with the Chiefs, you can't go through a season like that.
They can't. They have to have a more well-rounded approach in order to be a truly successful team in the NFL.
Well, now we're at 32 minutes into the show. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we are going to talk about all the Celtics roster moves. Tayshaun Prince made his debut today with the Celtics in LA.
Tayshaun?
Yeah, Tayshaun. And
back to Detroit.
Actually, that wouldn't be a bad destination for him, really. They're starting to win without the cancer of Josh Smith.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing is they got rid of him, and they won all those games in a row, and I think they've lost 3 in a row.
Yeah, well...
But they did play the Hawks today, who are...
The best team in the East.
Yeah.
Danny Ferry did a good job, and I hope at some point they let Danny Ferry go. So, like I said, we're going to take a quick 3-minute break. We will be back with some Celtics and Red Sox talk. This is the New England Sports Blog on Blog Talk Radio. Welcome back to Blog Talk Radio. This is New England Sports Blog. We have about 24 minutes left, so we're going to talk about the Celtics and some moves that they've made over the last month, I guess. And you know, talk about the Red Sox in the last 10 minutes or so. We've been getting ready to go for pitchers and catchers in about 4 weeks. Nesson has already given away spring ticket, spring training packages and stuff. So seems like it should be further away than what it is. So the Celtics have made a slew of trades. They have a bunch of draft picks. The starting lineup from opening day, you take out Jeff Green and Rondo, and you saw Bradley, Sullinger, Olenek, / Tyler Zeller. You know, they're facilitating a lot of trades. And it's kind of funny, and I don't hear many people talking about this aspect of what the Celtics are really doing, but they are going out and they're helping teams make trades, essentially. Like, for instance, they helped Doc Rivers get Austin Rivers.
If you'll give us something, basically,
we'll facilitate it.
Yeah. You scratch our back, we'll scratch yours.
Yeah, because, like, the whole Cleveland, you know, the Cleveland Cavaliers taking that trade with the Brooklyn Nets to basically help them land Kevin Love and LeBron James, that scored the first-round pick. And it could end up being, you know, not a bottom-dweller first-round pick. Cleveland's been having their struggles. You know, you look back at the trade that sent KG and Paul Pierce and that out. That's looking like a genius move right about now. I mean, they're trying to fire sale Brook Lopez. They're working on a three-team trade with Oklahoma City Thunder to send Kendrick Perkins and Javale McGee from the Nuggets to the Nets and could you imagine him and Gene? So, it's a funny story about this.
Yeah.
I wish I could source this one, but someone posted on Twitter that either KG is going to adopt Jahami Heath or he's going to kill him. Yeah, that was so funny. He's either going to adopt him as a son or KG's just going to kill him. So I thought that was kind of humorous.
Probably adopt him and then kill him anyway.
Yeah, KG's that kind of guy. The whole headbutting incident, that made me laugh so hard since Dwight Howard.
Yeah.
But, you know, after he did it, you see KG going down the court and yelling at himself, what the hell did I just do? What the F did I just do? And then he goes back and tries to run into the melee as security's trying to lock him out. That was messed up. If this was the David Stern NBA, KG would have got more than one game.
Oh, he would have got a handful. Yeah. Yeah, it's no joke. He would have got a handful. He didn't like fighting.
No, he didn't want to have another mouse in the palace situation. But I think, you know, a point that Brian Shaw made, and it's kind of funny we're just talking general basketball, but, you know, the Celtics aren't that interesting right now, so our fan base will have to kind of take it as it is. But who's the coach of the Lakers? Is it Brian Shaw?
Yeah, Byron Scott.
Byron Scott, that guy.
Brian Shaw
is the Nuggets. You know, he made a very good point that the college game is so much more physical than the NBA game. And it's something that I kind of noticed, 2 years ago when the kid from Louisville broke his leg?
Yep.
During that tournament, it was one of the first times that I really watched college basketball in a long time. I never made time for it, so I had, you know, so invested time-wise, money-wise, in the Celtics that I didn't really make time to watch it. But the college game is kind of like how basketball was in the 80s and the 90s in the NBA.
I was watching the Duke game, 46ES, and that Jaleel Okafor kid.
He's dirty.
Yeah, he's very athletic, very skilled. We somehow can get that kid. Oh, my God, please, thank you. But I was watching, and I could just tell, and I know Duke has that stupid camera angle that everybody hates. I can't stand it, but it's the only place they do it. But you could tell, you know, they're coming up and down the floor, and of course they're just banging on each other. Like, there's no...
That's how it should be.
That is how it should be. I hate how soft basketball has become.
If I played high school basketball here in Florida, I would have either been a point guard or a shooting guard. But being 6'1", 6'2" in Maine makes you a center.
Yeah.
I love banging. Like, that was like the best part of being a forward in a center was banging in high school.
No.
and you want to, you know, you want to be physical. You want to hold them down.
It's getting out of the tree.
And the worst thing is I'm trying to be serious.
We know what we're talking about. Yeah, I mean, it's one of the premises that, look, the more physical you are, the better player you were. And it was, especially in high school, because so many kids are so tentative. And, you know, when you get physical with them, they automatically back off. And it's an intimidation factor. But nowadays, nobody uses that anymore.
No,
like trash talking. Trash talking's falling down.
Oh, yeah.
That pisses me off.
I was a hell of a trash talker, too.
No, I love it.
Yeah. And, you know, and I think they made the game so European. Right? You know, basically David Stern's what... ...a whole division in Europe of four teams, or five teams, maybe in the NBA's case. And, you know, really...
They're just trying to get into the entire market. They see all that money.
Yeah, there's a lot of money over there. You know, their economy's struggling. But the fact of the matter is, physical basketball is more fun to watch than fans. I mean, who wants to watch Pau Gasol shoot 20-foot jumpers? Not this
guy. I'd rather take shard of glass and get them live.
And that's kind of like the thing, you know, Dwight Howard, you know, down here in Orlando, he's pretty much hated. Jeff is going to hate him because he basically got his brother canned for no reason, essentially, here in Orlando as well. And, you know, Jeff Van Gundy's talking about the fact that Dwight Howard isn't as physical as he used to be in Orlando. The reason is he can't.
No, every time they call an offensive foul on you. It happened. I watched the Rockets game the other night, and yeah, every time he dropped his shoulder, boom, offensive foul.
It's automatic.
Walk over.
It's automatic.
And it's like, come on, dude, like, you're a 300. Like, he was banging on. Oh, Golden State. And it was Andrew Bogut.
Yeah, I saw that.
7'1", 280. Like, he's not a small dude. And he fell over like it was string cheese that just got, you know, flopped out of the package. It's terrible.
Yeah, it's really too bad because I think basketball is more interesting when you had Larry Bird going after Kurt Rambis, and you had those type of matchups, and, you know, the hatred for... They
become so corporatized. That's the problem.
Yeah, there's so many rules and regulations. There's so many just, you know, reasons why they can't. The reasons why they can't, you know, bang. They can't do the physical part of the game.
Yeah, obviously the players are more athletic. I like, you know, seeing the highlight and shit, and, you know, people dunking, jumping, all that stuff. Because obviously you see things now that you didn't see 20 years ago, and it's amazing that the game's evolved to the way that it has. But I still appreciate what, you know, the 80s and early 90s brought to us. You know,
bring back hand checking.
That's completely what changed the game. Yeah, when you couldn't reach out and touch somebody as a defender, it changed the entire aspect of the way you played.
That was the beginning of taking physicality.
I mean, now all you can do is get in front of the guy and hope he runs you over.
Yeah, that's your only. And it's kind of like how all sports are going. I mean, the NFL has essentially gone away from a lot of defense to play
defense. Yeah.
And
basically blood shattered.
Yeah, I mean, look at all the penalties over the weekend on corners and stuff like that for just one
crap. Garbage. Yeah.
And you know, it happened against the Colts, happened before the Patriots, it happened against Seattle and the Packers, but you know,
well, there was no bias. You didn't flag
Yeah, and that's the kind of like the thing is, you know, Michael Jordan was a great defender because of the hand check. If he would have played defense, he was a defensive player of the year multiple times.
Yeah,
I think he's the only player that won it. Both as he won the MVP and the defensive player of the year, the scoring title, the only player to win the scoring title and the defensive player of the year in the same year. And what made him so great is he had those big hands and he had a strong upper body. And when he's playing guys like Reggie Miller, who are just tiny, he can control what Reggie Miller did.
That's right.
Yeah, it's the same thing. Yeah, and everyone saw it and nobody cared.
Nope. And I mean, they asked him later down the road, did you push up a Brian Scott? He said, what'd they call?
They didn't call
him. They didn't call anything, exactly. So I guess I didn't, you know. No, the hand check was taken out of the game. And I understand the premise of it because they wanted to stop seeing people get pushed, you know. But the hand check as a perspective, you know, and the funny thing is, they still haven't even gotten rid of it all the way. You still watch post players arm-barring guys all day.
But the same idea.
I mean, it's the same exact thing. You're still using your arm to isolate an individual and keep him where you want him, you know. If they really want to, you know, progress the game, you've got to make the serious changes that the fans want and the people want to see, you know. The game in its purest sense is the best form. I think baseball is still so successful in so many ways because they haven't changed anything in 100 years.
Yeah, and they can understand that they kind of want to take it out of a primitive kind of thing with being overly physical. I mean, some of the stuff that happened in the 80s, especially with the Pistons and stuff, was probably over the top. But, you know, it's so soft now. The basketball that's being played in America right now was the basketball that was being played in Europe in 92 when the Dream Team went over there. So you had finesse guys. You had guys that could shoot.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, a physical team like the USA Dream Team, nobody could do anything.
No. I mean, our players, I mean, we're obviously way more athletic and we're bigger and we're stronger and we're faster. But we used our American style of play to such an advantage because they had no answer for anything that they were doing, you know. And I mean, that's why Charles Barkley looked so good in the 92 Olympics. They basically said he should have won. If there was an MVP award, it would have been given to Charles Barkley.
Yeah, him. I mean, could you imagine back then, I mean, as soft as Europe is as far as when it comes to basketball, playing against him and Carmelo.
Just too angry.
angry, yeah, man. I still love that the this Christmas they actually had that thing that they started last Christmas where they did the whole dream team thing.
Yeah.
And my two favorite parts of the whole thing is when Charles Barkley and Karl Malone got in a fight in practice. And the other funny thing that happened in that documentary was Charles Barkley, because he was a big partier back then, and he was kind of the Gronkowski of the early 90s.
Yeah.
And you had him talking about the fact that Larry Bird was drinking Budweiser's, well, and Charles Barkley could not keep up. And that just made me laugh. Larry's just, the funny thing is Chuck Fair, and he's like, yeah, Larry Bird just laying by the pool, and, you know, I think he's drinking light beer, so I'm drinking, you know, I think it was like a Bud Light or whatever it was. Larry Bird's drinking full freaking Budweiser's, and he's drinking two of those for every one of Charles Barkley to drink. And Charles Barkley got so wasted, he couldn't even go out. Larry's acting like nothing's going on.
Well, the funny thing is, I don't know if you've ever watched that thing, like the Larry and Magic blindness thing. And they said the greatest thing about Larry Bird was on a Saturday afternoon, you could go out to his house and watch him mow his lawn. Could you imagine if a pro athlete did that today?
Well, he's the heck from French Lick. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's kind of funny, you know, the internet, I'm going to sound like an old person now, but, you know, between the internet and, you know, cable TV and the amount of shows, and I mean, you think about when you travel to places around the country, there's very few places nowadays that if you go to a big city, like, say, Milwaukee, Boston, you go to Milwaukee, Boston, New York City, LA, Philly, and you can go into any part of those financial districts and you will not hear a voice an accent.
Nope.
Back 20, 30 years ago, you used to have, you know, you had the guys who live in South Boston that really heavy Boston accent. They'd be the same guys working in the financial district and stuff. But the way education and TV and everything, it's kind of funny now. Everyone sounds the same.
Okay.
And it was one of the things I was most disappointed for, because when I was making my drive down here from Maine, I made a point to stop in Georgia, in Savannah, Georgia, on the way down, because I remember when I was a kid.
The southern slang.
Yeah, and I mean, nothing drives me crazier than a girl with a real southern
accent. The Daisy Duke.
Yeah, just like a real, like, sweet southern belle. And, you know, you stop and you go to the Cracker Barrel there. So that's what I remember as a kid. We went to the Cracker Barrel, and cute girl, really, like, the accent the whole bit. I, you know, that's all I was going for. I just wanted to hear the accent. I was going to head back to my truck and just go home. And, you know, you kind of lost that. And it's kind of funny.
It's made it so that nobody's an individual anymore. It really is sad in reality. Like, being from someplace, remember it used to mean something? Like, that's the whole thing about, you know, that sports has changed, and it's changed the athletes. Because, remember, like, nowadays, they're like, okay, I'm from Chicago, you know, and that's still a place that people have pride. Like, Derrick Rose and those guys also have pride that they're from Chicago.
Yeah,
you know?
It's also like that.
And it's tough, but it's still tough to find, you know, nowadays. So few athletes are like, yeah, I'm from, you know, here. You know,
yeah.
Where I play for here. It's a little pride because everything's all about the almighty dollar.
Yeah, and going back to like Larry Bird mowing his lawn, where I was kind of getting off track, and basically the fact that, you know, you could have people grow up in a certain situation, and now, you know, the social economics of the United States and how it's been the last 15 years to 20 years, and the fact that basically, from the time we were 10 to 12 years old, there wasn't a big difference between us and our friends, either, you know, for what we had, you know, for basketball shoes, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It didn't really matter if your parents were wealthy or not. You know, there's enough money going around for that, like, there wasn't as big of a difference.
Yeah.
So, you know,
the socioeconomical difference wasn't as large.
Yeah, so like Larry Bird mowing his lawn, people think that's nuts. But real,
he's making, you know, $700,000 a year in, you know, 1990, what's he doing mowing his own lawn?
Yeah, exactly. And the thing is that's how he was raised. You know, you do your own work, and if you do anything that you can do
for
him, you don't.
Made it successful.
Yeah, and you don't, any work that you can do yourself and not pay someone else to do. Yeah, it's more money.
Still mows his own lawn.
in Indiana.
Yep.
The French one.
Incredible.
Yeah, I think he actually had a motorized one. I don't think he had the one where you just push it in the blades and just go in the circle.
Yeah. He got it. Oh,
yeah. Yeah, me and Heather, well, when we came down here, we didn't. We had a push mower. It died a terrible death. Jeremy did something to it. It was running when we got paid. Jeremy had it for one day and killed us.
Must have.
Yeah, why do you have such a difficult love life? But back to the sport. But back to the point is we finally went out and bought a lawnmower. And you think here in Florida where you have grass grow year round and you'd be able to buy the lawnmower. We have to wait 2 weeks for Sears to ship us a lawnmower.
What? Yeah. Could just go in and buy one?
No.
They didn't have a Depot?
Nope. No, Home Depot we probably could have, but I had a gift card to Sears,
yeah,
so
you do that.
Yeah, you know, it's funny that's just sitting there, so might as well use it. But yeah, no lawnmower for us for 2 weeks.
That's incredible.
Couldn't believe it.
Only in 2015 does that happen.
Yeah, I mean, like we live in Florida. I mean, grass grows year round.
A month out of the year, we get grass. Yeah, green grass.
So we have about 5 minutes left, and our selfish talk action took us absolutely nowhere. yeah, so we ended up talking about lawn mowing and Southern girls.
And,
yeah, exactly.
As well as Southern girls.
Yeah, so, so the Red Sox haven't done anything since, you know, since the winter meeting. So, you know, they're kind of, what do you think of them with the roster the way it sits?
Second place. Maybe.
What would you say? I mean, here we are.
You know, the tough thing about, you know, guessing anything about baseball, which is why they always say, like, the odds of picking the World Series winner are so astronomical, which is why when, like, say, someone goes to Vegas and places, you know, a $20 bet and $2,500 off of, you know, picking the division winners. Like, ESPN every year, as you know, ESPN the Mag picks the division winners. They've been, I think they said somewhere in the last, like, they've done it for like the last 5 or 10 years or something like that. They've literally picked like 10% of them right. And they're like, it's so impossible to pick baseball at the beginning of the year because so much changes over the course of the season, whether it's injury, whether it's, you know, trade, whether it's, you know, signing, people that haven't signed yet. So I think that they've made great strides. We need to make the moves we made, but we still don't have any. And honestly, you're not winning World Series nowadays without them.
Do you think that the Washington Nationals with the signing of Scherzer today put Strasburg on the block?
No.
Then you have Cole Hamels. I mean, are the Red Sox going to go after Cole Hamels or Strasburg?
They're not going to get rid of Strasburg. He's not going in. They've already said that. Like, basically, they traded Scherzer because they know that in that division, yeah, at least when Atlanta's retooling.
Well, Bleacher Report was reporting tonight that they actually did have a long trade.
Really, at some point. It depends what you can get for them. You know what I mean? It depends what you can get for them. If you can get, they don't need a lot of hitting. They got a good offensive team. You know, they have Zimmerman at third. They got, you know, Bryce Harper out in the outfield. They got the first baseman, pretty good. I mean, they've got a good hitting team. I don't see a lot of, I mean, they won their division. Honestly, I mean, it's not like they need to do too much.
Yeah, they need to do enough to get out of the first round. Matt Williams kind of boned them. But, you know, back to kind of like the Red Sox, I mean, do you see them throughout spring training finding an ace to trade?
I don't either. I feel that they should, but I don't want them to make the wrong move either. And I don't want us to put our team in a situation where we're stuck with a bad contract.
I mean, they have five solid players.
We have five good starters. Yeah, I mean, I think, well, we have six good starters. I mean, you say, I think roll into the season with it, see where it takes us through the first 50 games, and then reevaluate it from there. I know 50 games seems like that, but then it's not even a third of the season.
Yeah, I mean, I think if the hitting can gel, the fielding can gel, that's more important.
Games. I mean, honestly, we're still going to win. So.
Yeah. And that's kind of where they have to be at. But they gotta field well. You know, is Sandoval going to, you know, play third base for the next probably two seasons. That probably has left as DH. You know, is he going to be solid?
Is this going to be the year Poppy finally falls apart? You know?
I don't think so.
There's so many variables going into this year. Pedroia's coming off an injury.
I'd be more concerned with Pedroia than I would be Poppy. And the thing is, he's proved, a lot of DHs by the time they reach either 38 or 39 at this point, a lot of the good DHs have already fell off the wagon at this point. His bat speed's good. I think he's going to hit 30 home runs and do 100 something RBIs. I don't see him falling off that much. You have Sandoval, that's going to be a big one to get him in the years.
But it's got to happen when. When is it going to happen? The question you have to ask yourself. That's why every year I'm so skeptical going into the season, not knowing the variables of what exactly is going to happen to David, because he's such a big part of our team, honestly. If he doesn't perform, we don't have a chance. That's the big thing. We rely so much on him.
I think he's going to perform. I think that, it's one of those things that he has a lot of pride. So, he knows what he's going to have. He's playing in the Dominican. He plays in the Winter League, here and there. I really think that he plays the game not for money. I think he plays it because he enjoys it. And I think he plays it because, he loves Boston.
Outside of complaining the last 4 years about how much he's getting paid.
Yeah.
But, that's all. The price of that, realistically. He understands its value, and he's just trying to cash in on it. Yeah, he's a pro athlete. They have a short shelf life as far as, income goes, unless you become crazy.
So that's all we have for tonight. We probably talked another hour, but you guys heard about Lon Noy, Jeremy's love life, and a few other things tonight that you guys didn't really necessarily need to hear. But, that's kind of what we're about. We kind of talk about it all, especially when there's not a whole lot going on in the sports other than the Patriots. But we will be back next week, Monday, 8 o'clock. Thank you.
What's
that? The Rock Workshop.
Then you can't talk about something going on in general.